My Blotto guys, it's just us. I'm so excited to be here with you this evening. Just the fermented four. How is everyone? How you doing?
It's nice. Feels safe when it's just us.
It does. Yeah. It does. And it's great that we're coming today together today on such a big day in Beatles history, right? I mean, we know that today we celebrate the day that that first Beatle, the one we all know, brought Indian music to the band. You guys know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
George Harrison.
No way, Becker. I hate that this George narrative has really taken hold on Big Beatles. I mean, guys, if you've done your research like I have, if you get into the super duper dark web, you know it was obviously Ringo who made that first trek to India. And he came back with a demo. Oh, weird. It was actually about the song we're talking about tonight. Today is the day Ringo presented the original demo with Indian influence to it that became a Rubber Soul song that we know. It had a different title when he first brought it in. What Goes Non? What Goes Non? Do you guys want to give it a listen?
I would love
Wait,
to.
Definitely. You've heard it?
Yeah, I have it right here.
What goes non is my bread. What goes non is my bread.
Unbelievable. You know, just really digging into that Indian influence. Yeah, it was Ringo.
Good evening, my Blotto Scruffs. Thank you once again for spending some time with us. So we'd encourage you to crack open whatever makes you forget you have work tomorrow, and let's dive into a night of borderline irresponsible Beatles worship. I've got a few taglines. I'm going to start trying them out over the next couple of weeks.
All right.
Guys haven't heard them yet. I've got Blotto Beatles. Who needs accuracy when you have anecdotes?
That's pretty good. I like it.
Mm-hmm. I'm Becker. This is episode 77. That was a good year for punk rock and even a greater episode for you, I'm sure. As a reminder, we are the podcast where a couple of friends have a couple of drinks and come together to discuss and rank a single Beatles track. That is our foremost focus. And you know, this spirited journey through the Beatles universe isn't a one-man show. So let's get them all in here. There were four Beatles, I think, and there's four Blottos, and that's just absolutely no coincidence. With this man's recent cold opens, I'm guessing we've all been asking ourselves what goes on in his mind. It's the A side to my A side. It's my co-host and yours, Tommy.
What is up, A side? It is so good to be back. It's been a little while for us. Been a while, and it just feels good to be back.
It does
in the virtual Abbey Road with you.
And it feels good to have you here, and it certainly feels good to let me bring on the man next to you here. Sometimes we've all got to let our freak flags fly, and when this man does, I call him Loose Springsteen, but you know him as the George Martin of New England. It's executive producer Scotty C. What's up, my friend?
Oh, happy to be here. This is good. We got the energy.
We do. We're amping it up. We had a slow...
It was a slow start.
We had a slow pre-ramble here.
I'm feeling it.
Thank He's goodness part. You've never heard me talk about technical difficulties. Like, I would never, ever say anything like that.
He's part man, he's part maestro, but he's all musical supervisor. You know him as RB. That B always stands for Beatles, but tonight it stands for Boys, which is probably just a much better
he's
song.
Talking about boys, which is funny because that's very near the bottom of our list.
Gents, how is everybody doing? We said it already, but we're back together. We've had a little bit of a gap. We just we finally got the episode out. We had a great chat with Alex Goldman, great podcaster. I had a lot of fun with him. That's that episode's ranking up the listens. That's great. Got some nice notes on that one.
Alex was a ton of fun to hang out with, you know. And I think my favorite part of that episode is actually not even the Beatles talk. It was the synergy of Alex and Scotty, like just the executive producer vibe. They were just giving executive producer, as the kids would say, whole night.
I was worried they were just going to, you know, start a podcast without us. Just
with no content.
Yeah, a lot of fun with that. Thank you. Thanks for the listens there. Also, a lot of you are some eagle-eared folks, and I mean, I guess we just should get it over at the upfront here for the most part. But we did miss a magical mystery word. We hit a lot in that episode, so I hope as listeners who like that sort of material that we got there with it. But we did miss one, so we owe one to you right now. So cheers to everyone who pointed that one out. Drink up. Say it's a good way to start an episode, you know, shoot it
especially
in, shoot
when
it
we're
out.
Not recording in arrears.
Yeah, that's true. I almost feel more jittery now doing this from the scratch, but
just us, buddy, just us here. It's your whole lot of friends.
I've got
don't need to be nervous.
I tuned up the soundboard this week, so I feel like I'm gonna maybe try that a little bit more. We have a new Paul this drop in here.
What the fuck.
We had Paul saying what the fuck the other day on the socials where he was
that was really
posted
good.
On behalf Foreigner. Of trying to get Foreigner in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Paul made a little Instagram shot there using some F-bomb, so hopefully that's going to come up. And
I love the little face he makes episode. After he says that too. It's just kind of,
yeah.
So guys, we're talking about new Beatles stuff. We're about to talk about old Beatles stuff, but before we do, it's a podcast not just about the Beatles. We also have a couple cocktails, a couple drinks, a couple beverages,
bevs,
a couple libations.
I like that.
While we sit around and talk. So this evening, I went out this afternoon, and I was like, I don't care that it's windy and rainy and wet. It is officially spring. And so I went out and grabbed myself a bottle of tequila, and I'm having a lighter margarita with some soda water on top. It's settling nicely. And then I got some Grim beers in the cooler for later on.
Nice, nice.
Those Brooklyn beers that they're doing a nice job over there. And you know, of course, I got in the holster always that Devil's Purse, the Hanline Kolsch, the White Can, the official beer of Bottle Beatles. RB.
Yes, sir.
What do you got in the cups tonight?
Well, I made a cocktail earlier and I drank it.
It's gone.
But it was... it had bourbon. I think it was kind of like a bourbon old fashioned with a squeeze of lemon in it. So I don't know if that's what that's called exactly, but it just had a little citrus squeeze in it and it was delicious and I drank it and it's gone now and I'm sad. But I opened this beer and that's cheering me right back up.
Good.
And it's called Acid Raindrops. And it's an IPA from Modest Man Brewing, which is in New Hampshire. Ooh.
I love that band, Modest Man. Right.
That, I think you're thinking of the Modest
Float Mouse. On. Yeah, there. Yeah. I crashed my car.
And I got this. I got the Harpoon Camp Wanna Mango over here.
Oh, pretty good.
Over here.
I like those.
That's
ones.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're like totally, you know, a little.
Those remind me of our friend Colin, thing. Who's been on the podcast several times.
The Wanamango?
He loves a Camp Wanamango.
He makes great drinks for us, too, yeah.
Scotty C., what do you have in the bottles this evening? I won't even say cups, because I know you don't that. Oh, my goodness. Look at this guy with a jam jar with some wine in it.
Jam jar wine, yeah. Some Cabernet Sauvignon. Coppola. Yeah.
Nice. And that's what you got going?
That's what I got. I'm going to do this as long as I can. Then I have some Modelos in the fridge. I'll become that fellow.
Well, because we all
later.
Know you are the fellow with the Modelos.
And yeah, so.
By the last episode, how many bits can we stack on top of bits? It's going to be amazing.
Bits on bits. Scott and I were at a bar last night, and he was the first one to order a beer. Like, we were having, like, I was having a cocktail, and he was like, I'm going to have a Miller Lite. And it's just like, what a turn. You know, what a turn.
Yeah.
I didn't see it coming. I saw Disney coming. I saw Disney buying the Beatles. Yeah, I forecasted the whole thing. You know, Scotty drinking beer. still blows my mind. Yeah. Like, I did not see it coming.
Well, I had questions because I had to drink cans of beer or a glass of filled with beer. Yeah. But I didn't really have much experience with bottles. So I was asking about
the way to hold it. We did talk about this a lot last night.
How this is not the way to drink a beer. You don't drink it like this. So with your hand.
Yeah, you don't do full grip on the neck.
Neck right now.
For
yeah,
like
you don't want to grip the neck like that.
So I was talking to Scotty about the two fingers in front of the neck, thumb behind the neck.
Oh, yeah. This move.
As the pull on a beer bottle.
You look cool.
Or bottom of the bottle. You're just around bottom, and
this is what
you're
we came up with,
that.
Right? Hold it like this with my just in the palm.
No,
hand.
Scott. No, that's dangerous. Scott's balancing a wine bottle on his hand. Like that's,
It's like if you ask me to explain something about my body right now that I do naturally, I can't even tell you how I hold a bottle of beer. You know, it's like how do you breathe? Like I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to describe
our breathing. Yeah, when you said something about my body, I can't describe. I went other places, but
how did that happen?
I meant like
Becker. What do you have in your cups? What do you have in your cups this evening?
How does your heart beat? I got the usual culprits for the most part. I've got some white cans around. It was just up in RB's neck of the woods, neck of New England. So I got some nice Vermont beers. But today I was intrigued enough to pick up. My local liquor store has started stocking THC beverages. So I got this Cheech and Chong grapefruit twist. So I'm gonna take a few sips of this one tonight. So we'll see.
Right. I'm sure some, our technical difficulties will not go off the charts at all.
There's some sort of gray area that they can be selling, because it's not a dispensary, it's just a liquor store. There's some sort of gray area that is THC is derived from hemp, but I don't know. I didn't dive that far into it. So they were on the shelf. They said Cheech and Chong. I thought I'm going to give it a whirl. So check in with me later, see how those are going.
I have a question, though, on the beer can stuff. You have a Cheech and Chong beer, and I've seen, like, you know, maybe RB or one of the others have maybe it's a song title, like a Bowie song or some reference. Like, they don't have to, like, you can just use people's names in songs on cans and name your
beers
after.
Well, this is Cheech and Chong's product.
Oh, their actual product.
This is like Cheech and Chong branded THC seltzer.
Something tells me Cheech is more in charge of that than Chong.
They're both happily depicted on the can. They look like they get along splendidly.
I feel like Cheech is more of a go-getter.
And then I feel like beer names in general are probably just a little bit of a gray area. You know, like I don't think that Bowie's getting any money off of the Electric Blue beer.
Yeah, if they name a beer Starman, he's not getting money or anything.
Yeah.
And usually most of those are like,
well, he's definitely not getting money.
No, he definitely is not.
Because we killed him that night at karaoke.
All right, everybody. So that is what we're drinking this evening. We're about to get into the episode and talking about this song. But Becker, like we talked about this, it's been a few weeks since we've even had a discussion, since we've even gotten together, since we've had a Zoom, since we've done a recording. Like, I'm struggling. Like, so, like, who are the Rolling Stones? Like, what are we even talking about here? Like, it's... That's what it is, right? Like, we're doing a Rolling Stones.
You know, I was going to stop this whole segment, right? It's silly. It's getting corny. But at the end of the last episode, you had really sort of embarrassed me in front of Alex that I really was believing that you didn't know who the Beatles were. And so I said, all right, episode 77, I'm going to try it one more time. I'm going to try it one more time.
He's been just mispronouncing it this whole time. If we only had somebody here.
Yeah, we need our doctor of phonetics. I would say from when I'm 64 to Woodstock 94, the Beatles have cemented themselves as America's punk rock band formed in 1986 in East Bay, California, gaining a rapid following through their energetic shows at the local venue Cavern Club, addressed at 924 Gilman Street. They achieved mainstream success when their 1994 album Love Me Dookie catapulted them into the global spotlight, reviving mainstream punk the world over. And to this day, we have the Beatles to thank for that. And these albums, I mean, you'll never forget them. Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Kerplunky. Insomniac of All the Danger. These are just, you know, they're etched into our soul, these songs. You know, When I Come Together Around, Boulevard of Broken Number 9 Dreams.
That's good.
Johnny B. Good Riddance, Time Run for Your Life. American, You Dig Idiot.
Oh, no.
Long, hold on. Long, long, long view. There's a basket place. Trey Cool Cats.
Yeah, it.
You think that people would have had enough of Billy Joe Armstrong? Is that that's a good one?
Somebody got it.
You know, yeah, the Beatles. The Beatles. I mean, Mike Dirnt.
Dude, hey, whoa.
Love him.
You aren't talking about the Beatles.
No.
You're talking about those mainstream corporate punk rock heroes. Green Day.
Green Day.
I think I am. I'm talking about Green Day.
And I think, like, they're, like, Green Day is one of those bands, like, when Dookie came out, I had a lot of love for it. Like, it meant something to me. It was different sounding and pushed me into different places in terms of what I was listening to. And I would love to do a deeper dive because Dookie is kind of my start and end on Green Day. And maybe we call it, like, basket case of beer. And every episode, we drink a case of beer. We talk about one Green Day album. And we just, like, it'd be quick run on this pod for us, Becker. What do you think?
Yeah, if we can just do Dookie, I'm in. After
that. You don't want to do Kerplunk. You don't want to do American Idiot.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same. I think for me, Green Day was right on the cusp of me getting into real punk rock stuff, but this was like, I knew punk music, but this was accessible and on the radio, and I didn't have necessarily access to the records or tapes or stuff that, like, my cousins had played for me and things like that. And so hearing Longview, like, I remember that, I think it was on a summer vacation or something, hearing Longview and that bass and all of that, like, that hyped me up for something. Like, I didn't know what this was. So
Green Day at that moment did everything right that Blink 182 ended up doing wrong. You know, like, that I'm really, like, coming to that conclusion right now of, like, the humor in that style of punk and whatever, and that, like, Blink, who are freaking talented musicians and everything, but, like, Blink taking it just in the humor direction, take off your pants and jacket and all that stuff, but, like, Green Day being, like, the I'm all by myself secret song and the comments on masturbation in Longview and, like, all that like, teenagey feel, like, boy angst feel that, like, they nailed in that moment. Like, you get to this thing afterwards of, like, American Idiot, Black and Red, and it kind of feels like My Chemical Romance, but, like, a pop-punk My Chemical Romance or something that they end up doing, and you're like, I guess everyone that gets mainstream, but they had a special place for me in that very moment of Dookie. Like, it was important to me.
Yeah, I mean, how do you stay a punk rock band for 40 years or something? When did they start in 86 or something like that? Like, it's, and still be, like, a large band on the scene. Yeah. I don't know how you make that transition. Scotty C, did it matter when Green Day came out for you?
Not you really. I mean, I remember when they came out. I remember when Dookie came out, and I wasn't that into it. I had no idea in 1986, huh? Because that must have been like 94 or something.
Dookie's 94.
Dookie's 94, yeah.
That's wild that they were doing it for that long. 8 years before they got an album out.
It's like, think if your high school band hit or whatever, right?
Oh, I guess so, yeah. You're talking like they were 14 when they started or
something like that.
Yeah. Well, right on. That's really cool. But I agree. Like, they have, like, great power to their music, and they're great songwriters, and they have a formula, and they're crazy popular. Like, I cannot believe, like, my sister-in-law loves Green Day, and she's, like, 15 years older than me or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. The people they, you know, they reach.
RB, you've got an interesting angle on Green Day at this point, because and I'm almost thinking about Green Day more because your son's been playing it.
Yeah.
We've had campouts as family, and he's been playing drums, and we've been banging out and singing Green Day songs.
Yeah, my son is 14, and yeah, he's a big Green Day fan. And it's funny because just like you guys, like Dookie is kind of like the record that I know the most. And, I guess I came to know I know all the radio hits, right? And I know American Idiot pretty well as well.
Do you want to be one though?
Do I want to be an American Idiot? No.
Don't.
But yeah, he became a big Green Day fan, and he plays the drums, so he's a big Trey Cool fan.
Trey is a great drummer.
I have no problem with that. Like, yeah, if you're gonna idolize a drummer, like he that's a pretty good one.
I do remember with that, like, as Dookie came out, and like it was a thing among our friends. And Scotty, our friend Bennett, was like, it took me a long time to see, like, the bassist is driving that band. Like, he is pushing that thing forward, and, like, his bass lines are really at the front. And you're like, you don't think of that with punk music, right? Like, you think of it as so guitar-based. But Bennett was absolutely right. Like,
when you have a three-piece band, I think the bass player has more of a chance to stand out.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you're only competing with one other guitar. So depending on how your mix is, the bass might be really.
Yeah, if you have that powerful sound, like, yeah, hell yeah. I mean, you played in a three-piece, RB, and your bass sounded great, and that had to be up front because it was very, very important to the complete sound.
Yeah, it's one-third of the band, right?
I was like, right, I got into, so the Green Day, what I said was, I felt it, right? I you know. Okay, this is cool, this is interesting, I'm a 13-year-old kid, something like that. And then I get into real punk rock, I think, you know, or I get into indie underground punk rock stuff, and then I turn on Green Day very quickly high school.
It's a specific flavor of punk. They're a pop Becker, punk band, right?
And then at my prom, I think Good Riddance, Time of Your Life is the song, like our prom song. I'm like, look at these fucking guys. My head was shaved. I had like a mohawk, devil horns in the front. Like, I'm like pimply 18-year-old at my senior prom being like, fuck.
Wait, tell me more,
man.
Yeah, keep describing yourself.
I need to lie down and work.
Did you wear a shirt?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if you can sell out anymore. I don't hear people say that so much. I don't know that you can, right? Like, I'm all for anyone grabbing their dollar however they can right now. Like, if you make music and it is your living, like, goddamn, I don't know how you do it, you know?
I think the new paradigm is, right, like, Volkswagen commercial, right? Like, I screwed Volkswagen because they paid me. Sure. You know, like, that's great. Yeah. I think that's great. Like,
it's a good way to look at it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Did you just
get the word paradigm from our doctor of phonetics? Did they just feed you lines? They're not feeding me any lines. I still sound like an idiot. Why did we hire you, Dr.
You
Manhattan?
Are an American idiot.
You're fired!
I don't want to go too far off the rails here, but like... We're way off, right? Becker, I think a band for the two of us is Jawbreaker, right?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And there is a kinship, that there is the weird kinship of the Green Day Jawbreaker, like, through line of their history of playing the clubs together, of being the two bands who were like crown kings of that California scene. And then Green Day just rockets off and Jawbreaker ends up failing in a lot of ways.
It could have gone either way. Like, it's a legit coin toss. Jawbreaker could have been as big as Green Day, and Green Day could be Jawbreaker and still.
Jawbreaker was playing shows with Nirvana. Like, they were and is the only reason I hold Jawbreaker to more credibility because they failed? Like,
yes.
Okay, thanks. good talk.
Yeah, no, we absolutely. I mean, we are still living in a world, I think, of celebrating being into something that not the world loves, which I don't think is such a popular opinion anymore, right? Like, all of the bands that we really loved as teens and into our 20s are things that we kept to ourselves for the most part. And you were like, you don't, you, right? Like, it created an insert community. It created a connection with my best of friends. But then it kept people out. Like, you don't know what I like. I go to fucking ska shows on Sunday from 11 to 4 o'clock. You don't even know what my Sunday looks like. You know, and you're,
well, it's checkered
with your devil horn.
You had a checkered Sunday.
I think for me in 1994, I think Weezer was more of my band than Green Day was.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
That was when the Blue Album came out.
Right? Yeah. The Blue Album.
Here's one thing that for the listening audience, for you Blotto Scruffs, is I would say, like, you probably know Green Day's Dookie. You know that record. Go now and listen to Jawbreaker's Dear You. That is a record people don't really know. And it is there. These were peers of the time. Jawbreaker, right before that, is writing, how do we say that album before that? Bivouac. That's what we say. Bivouac.
It's pronounced biopic.
Dr. Phonetics, biopic. Get in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, these were the peers Bivouac that didn't, like, they were racing to the same finish line, and Green Day just got there first, right? Like, it's wild.
I do have a thought. You say punk or whatever, that's fine. Like, the style of music, the, you know, the fast drums, the aggressive power chord guitars. But they are poppy.
Totally,
like,
poppy.
It's very like catchy. Like, that's why they became, I don't know Jawbreaker. I don't know anything about them. But it parallels with the Beatles, a band that's a rock band, maybe not a punk band because it was in the 60s or whatever. But like, they took rock and roll, which was like the exciting music that was for the, you know, rebels and whatever, and made their thing out of it and made it poppy, but it's still a rock band.
Right.
So here's Green Day, who's inspired by punk rock, maybe like the stuff we're talking about that was, you know, kept to yourselves and your close friends and very, very...
Oh, Green Day, you know, is Disciples of Ramones, for sure, right? Like, that.
But they made it poppy. Like, they did exactly what the Beatles did.
And, yeah. We should stop on that. Except I won't. And I think it's a Beatles thing, too, is it adds certain, like... Music still had a regionality to it, and I think you can't take New York street punk, London punk, and put it out in the sun in California and expect it to sound the same. Because, like, you know, the day is so much different when you step out of your house and it's sunny all the time, even in the Bay Area, not just LA and all of that. And, like, New York, and you're running through the streets, like, all of this music reflects exactly the time and period and what it feels like to write it in, you know, like... I don't know.
Always part of me would love Billy Joel to just come out with a boy's regular haircut at this point. Like, this is, you know, that's just, yeah, this is where I am, you know, like. Oh, man, so that's who the Beatles are, everybody. We're about to get into this tune. Before we do, we're going to do one more thing. That's Scotty's going to announce to you, the listening audience, this week's magical mystery word. That word that if any of us utter it, we have to stop the podcast. We all got to take a drink. Scotty, what is this week's magical mystery word?
Question.
That's the magical mystery word of the week. Without further ado, Scotty, take us into this week's track.
Track. You know, you guys can say peek every once in a while.
You told me I couldn't say peek.
I said every once in a while. I'm just trying to reel it in.
Self-conscious.
It's track.
I'm more professional. A more professional executive producer wouldn't have shamed us so much. So,
can I even do this now? The track is What Goes On, and this is off of... This is off Rubber Soul. This is a song that... John Lennon had sort of started, at least, I'm going to say. I'm not going to say he wrote it. I mean, I guess he wrote it in maybe even like 59 or like Quarrymen days or pre-Beatles for sure. And it came up again one other time when they were on Please Please Me or something, and I don't think George Martin was super excited about it, but eventually here on Rubber Soul, they took a stab at it, and before they could actually do it based on, you know, whatever they had previously, Paul kind of did his own little demo of it where he plays like,
I wish we had that.
Yeah, no. Where he plays like everything, I think, like this way I'm looking at it, or the way I understand it, and presents it. Ringo, like, we want you to sing this song, and then they work on it together and work on the lyrics together. So this is I believe it's the only Beatles song where it's Lennon, McCartney, and Starkey.
Yeah.
As the writing credits.
Yep.
Which is very, very cool. The idea that, you know, they brought him in on it and gave him his voice. I don't think he had ever, at this point, you know, attempted to write a song or present a song even. So, you know, the collaboration part of it, I love that. They always have a Ringo song. People wanted Ringo songs on the albums, and so they had to have one, and they worked with this one, and it's obviously, we know Ringo loves country western music, American country music type stuff, and this is very much that. and it's super straight. Like, Ringo does not stray on his beat at all, but his beat is insane. And George is doing all these, like, I'm not gonna call it quacky, but like these, like, the quack, you know, I don't know, like,
call it quacky. Go ahead.
It's quacky. Like, he's like playing the role. They're like filling in, they're being the backing band for what Ringo, like, will get him excited or whatever. And there's harmonies. I don't know. I like it's a song, and and I want to listen to it.
Yeah, I do too, man.
I guess it was a B-side to Nowhere Man, which is like,
yeah.
Why is this on a B-side? But
flexing. Oh. Becker's showing the 45 over the Zoom call right now. Weird flex. But I think we give this one a listen. I think we hit pause on the podcast. I would love to listen to what goes on.
Yeah.
And we would encourage you, the listening audience, to also hit pause. Go give what goes on and listen from that Rubber Soul record. We'll see you back here in a few minutes, and then we'll talk about this.
Yeah, the harmonies are a big, you know, hopefully you listen to it too. I mean, the harmonies are a big, big selling on this tune.
Oh, yeah. Whatever, like, it feels Paul forward, right, in the harmony. The
Yeah, but you can hear the timbre of John's voice in there.
It's in there too, right? Like, totally. That part is really, really cool.
And that part of the polish of it, I thought, for me, I was like, oh, you know, like this being something that they seem to address quickly, still has all of the hallmarks of the Beatles getting their fingers in there. So I do like that piece too. I think Scotty teased us a little in the upfront. I wasn't sure how this song was going to. I was like, I don't know what people, because this is one that I think is popularly criticized, but I think gets its interesting.
Yeah, the Woe gives it a pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know, what was funny for me over the last couple of weeks of like diving into this one, especially like getting some headphone time with it, is like right now you really only get the stereo mix. Like if you're going to Spotify, if you're, you know, like YouTube, anything like that, you're getting that stereo mix, and there's a real hard pan on the stereo mix where you get Ringo on the left in his vocal and those harmonies are coming on the right. And then like, there's even more to that, right? In the complexity of it, like the way the guitar pans, I think, to the right as well. And I don't know why it's so hard to find a mono mix of this one. But what, I don't know, what were you guys listening to? Like, did you notice that at all? Like, did you?
I didn't notice that until I did the headphone time with it, I think. Yeah. You know, I had just mostly been listening in the car and on the go and in my earbuds, and that didn't come through as much. Or it also wasn't, like, super focused listening. Like, I like just having it play for a while until I sit down to put my notes in order. But yeah, that's when I put on my headphone, and I felt like I was hearing it way differently.
Yeah, and I think I've been a pretty vocal proponent of like the nostalgia of those stereo mixes a lot of times. And like, this is one where I'm like, man, I wish I also heard this one kind of straight ahead.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
to see how that established itself. I don't know, like, just where I got on it, on my listens over the last few days.
Yeah. Maybe when the super deluxe of this record, of the Rubber Soul record, yeah, comes out, we get a better, like, not one ear versus the other kind of competition mix.
And they're out there. I think there was, like, a CD box set that's the only way you can get this stuff on mono. And I don't remember now. I'm talking out of school. I forget.
No, but RB, what you're saying is exactly where I was, which was like, man, I want that super deluxe of Rubber Soul right now. Like, I want the remixes. And then I want the original mixes remastered, and then I want the mono, and I want the stereo, and I want the demos, and I want the things that brought us to this point. Like, I think it's really going to be interesting to see what they pick next for that, you know, because it feels like they're probably leaning more early Beatles, which I'm also cool with. I want all of that too, but you, with that early Beatles, you don't have all the takes. They were running themselves ragged to get, you know, get one them one at a time. Yeah. But we're going to get some more interesting mixes on that stuff with the Phil Jackson technology that he was
Phil
using
Jackson.
With the Chicago Bulls. Right? So,
is that the guy? He's the one who throws the chairs?
You know, it's all triangle. They put the mix into Bobby a triangle Knight. Is how it works.
Bobby Knight.
You're not a sportsman. You don't get it. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's all just a race of source material and technology, right? It's like the tech to rip apart the older stuff that we don't have all the versions and takes and tracks of, and then it's what's more accessible.
Interestingly, this one, there's not going to be a lot of alternate takes because they did this one in
one take. It's one take?
Yeah.
They did
pretty impressive.
Yeah, so one recording session, they recorded the main backing track, and then they overdubbed the vocal tracks. And oddly, that one little riff at the end that was overdubbed at the very last guitar phrase for whatever reason, to put a little bow on it. But that entire session was the record the backing track, record the overdubs, we're done with the song, and then they went on to record the 12-bar original song that we get on Anthology 2, which is just like a slow blues for like the rest of the evening.
Well, RB, you bring up a great point, because I think that whatever we think of this song at the end, where we place it, the success is not in the craftsmanship of this song, right? Like, it's pretty standard. It is the lyrics themselves are not much to look at, the where it goes, like, it's about the performance, right? Like, they did this in one take, and this is a killer performance.
Totally.
Ringo's drums on this song, like, Scotty, you and I talked about this a couple times. You were doing the karaoke, and like, that's a fast shuffle to nail and hold on to the whole time, right?
Yeah, like, I have a isolated drum track, and this is, I'm not a drummer, first of all. I can do some stuff
you are
on drums.
Don't sell yourself short,
but
Scott.
This is
he often
this
is Ringo.
And in fact, I even when I was diving into the song, there was some clip on YouTube or whatever where the guy was like, I played in a band, and the drummer I was playing with was like, Ringo's not good, and he was like, play this song or play Act Naturally and just hold that for a whole entire song, and just like,
yeah, Find that pocket but, and just spin it.
But this one also has a really tricky little kick drum or bass drum part. I'm going to play a little bit for you guys. And
yeah.
What I'll say to the listening audience as we're hearing that is like amateur drum player, amateur drummer.
Actual,
you know, great talking drummer, to you right now. That might not sound hard, right? Like that sounds kind of simplistic. If we play that again, or if you rewind and listen to it again, trying to take your right hand and do what he's doing with that on the hi-hat, that like, like, and then make that in and of itself is a wild thing. Like that is very hard.
Oh,
I think the bass drum on the foot, the boom, 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 boom. That little like that
doing
pulse.
Both, and then adding that in, doing both of those things, like that independence for him, like I don't know, amazing. Like people, the old story of Ringo's along for the ride. He's not that good a drummer or whatever. He was the second best drummer in the Beatles. Like this is an example of
Ringo's
like supreme talent. In playing for a song and also like maintaining a consistency that is wild.
And it's a good groove.
It's a great groove,
It is. So we've been real nice to this song for a little bit.
No, we got more nice things to say.
Let's go back. We haven't talked about Rubber Soul much in a while.
Yeah.
It's nice to be back here. And we haven't done a Ringo song in a while, right? It's been... You're Sergeant Pepper in the man. I don't even know the last time it's been a year.
Well, I have to. Yeah, it's only 3 months or something.
Boys, but maybe it was. So, has there been one since
Act then? Naturally, Boys, and this, I think, are the three that we've done that, right?
Three Ringos.
But, you know, I think this song is fine. It doesn't belong on Rubber Solver. It does not belong on Rubber Soul as a song. Like, it takes me out of the album a little bit. Like, this giving Ringo a sort of novelty country song thing is still happening because he hasn't slotted into sort of what he's going to be doing in the future or what the Beatles even want to be writing. Maybe they don't know how to write this type of songs they're doing for themselves for Ringo, but this is very pasted on, and in the moment I don't like it in Rubber Soul.
I feel like they've typecast Ringo at this point.
He
did act
country
naturally.
Western singer.
Exactly. He did act naturally on Help. This is like almost the same vein, right? Like
Honey Don't feels like
Don't on Beatles for Sale. Exactly. Same thing,
honestly. Like Don't Pass Me By on the White Album is a little bit like this too. Like
But they also get to that point of right after this, like the anachronism is Sgt. Pepper's, right? Like with a little help from my friends, you're like
perfect vocal for that.
What is this song? Like it's not a genre song.
I mean, Yellow Submarine, one more record,
right? But it's like right after this, they shift Ringo from being country western to children's singer.
But you get Yellow
Submarine, you get Good Night on the White Album, the lullaby song of the White Album, and then you get Octopus's Garden. Like he becomes the children's artist of the.
But
I'm not joking about that.
I know you're not joking, but I think there's still a through thread there. Like I feel like Octopus's Garden could be like a. It feels like there's like an underlying. Like country feel, even if it is like a psychedelic,
You're right about that.
Psychedelic underwater country song, maybe, but like
still got that like boom, 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 boom. But
I think if you're Ringo, this is a safe place to not, you know, to sort of put yourself into. Also, I know it's sort of what they're developing around him, and he's going into it relatively playfully. But how do you? As a fourth Beatle, bring a very sincere offering into the Beatles and ask them to assemble this together. Like you're setting yourself up for failure where it's a little bit easier to do sort of some of this material, almost character material, or what you're calling children's material. It's a simpler space to be like, you know, I'm having a good chuckle and having fun up there too, versus, you know, George Harrison coming in and trying to bring his songs in and probably bearing his heart a lot more.
I think the Beatles Ringo. Were never afraid to do both serious and comedy, right? Like,
sure.
One of the benefits of like one of the really beautiful things about being like this kind of a weird, funny thing jaunt we're doing, and also that song also is going to get dark and strange, or the next song might be a dark, strange thing. You know,
well, how do you that break
balance
up,
is really important.
How do you break up Michelle and Girl?
You slap what goes on in the middle.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Scotty.
But first, like, you make me listen to Michelle, which is great and has this like yearning and wraps up side A. And then I got to get up. I got to flip this record over. And I'm like, all right, what could they do next? And then you're like, wait a minute, what? Is this the same record that I flipped? Did they mispress this record?
Mood shift.
Because we're getting our different Beatles. We're getting the Beatles that I, you know, start to really, really call my own and covet on Rubber Soul. I know we're a little divided on where that happens. But yeah, this moment, I'm just like, oh, and here's kind of doing this thing, you know?
It's funny.
And I don't feel like Ringo sells it as well as he does some of the other tunes. Like, no, he sounds great. But
his voice is monotone, but like,
I believe that naturally more than this, you know?
I think in a lot of ways, the Beatles are being very supportive toward Ringo and all of the song choices that they kind of like set toward him. Like they know like this is his lane.
This is what he does.
This is what he does well. Like the melody is not complex. It's like it's mostly like you're moving in a there's no
short
big
range
leaps
there,
or anything like that. Like they just give him some great support. And when the Beatles are supporting you, like, it's going to be a fucking good song.
Well, he knew, too. He knew. Like, there's plenty of quotes from Ringo being like, yeah, those are... I sit with three great songwriters. That's not me. And I occasionally try and do the best I can. You know, like, he knew who he was. Great drummer. A supreme compatriot to be a part of a band that is going to, like... not be an antagonist and bring people together and all those things. Like Ringo knows who he is. Like,
but this wasn't even.
I think
like,
it comes out here.
But this wasn't even him being like, "I want to do this country song" or "I want to do this thing." It was a song that he. I mean, he had a hand in, but like John wrote it years ago.
This was reaching back to tell like, what do we have that we can give to Ringo? Like, as a gift.
There is a lyric, right, that they say is like the Ringo lyric, and that's where they give him song credit.
It's probably the best lyric in the song, though. I think.
Yeah, what is it? I'm looking at the lyrics.
I met
right
you
now.
In the morning what waiting for lyric? The tides of time.
Yeah.
I think.
Waiting that's for the tides of time.
Now
right?
The tides have turned, I think, is the next see, one, right? Like, it's a little turn.
But now the tide is turning. Yeah. And I can
he loves to see, huh?
I think it's pretty good. I think that's the best line in this song. So if Ringo put that in there, then he deserves the triple writing credit.
I have one more. I just came to my head right now. Yeah. So Ringo loves like country music.
Yeah.
But there's like also inland. Some undersea stuff going on.
He also loves the ocean and the sea, like the octopus's garden, the yellow submarine, and like
tides. And he brought tides of time.
Like, this guy's... I want to see his movie.
Yeah.
By land, by sea.
A nautical theme.
yeah, you're right.
Like airplanes but next. Yeah.
He's. And here's the other thing, like, really friggin' cool of John and Paul to be like, we already had this one. Ringo adds one lyric.
Let's give him right.
He
credit.
Sings it. We're going to give him the credit. Ringo deserves. Like that behind the George writes his own songs. He gets some of it. He gets some money on the backside. Ringo needs some money on the backside. Like,
well, I mean, he added the most clever. He added compatriot. The most clever lyric to the tune. So
yeah, it's a kind thing that they didn't need to do, right? Like, I think that's cool.
And I think there's a new way, and that's maybe there's a new way of the Beatles writing, and they don't know necessarily how to do it yet for Ringo. You know, maybe I've already sandwiched that point in, but right, like they're coming in with the Norwegian Wood songs that feel like just much more personal in a different way. Like how do you transfer that over when you're sort of rediscovering your superpower, you know? So it's easy to walk the line. Now I feel when the Beatles walk the line that it's just a little bit more cosplay-y to me. Like when they take girl groups and say this song was inspired by a girl group, I can pull that moment out and feel it a little bit, but still goes through the Beatles filter. When it's been inspired by, you know, something, some another Motown thing, I feel it when I go back and listen to the source track they're referencing, but it's still Beatlesified in my mind. When they do the country western vibe, it feels
throwback.
Maybe a little more karaoke-ish or something, a little more just like deliberate. It hasn't gone through the machine, you know.
Yeah. I will say that, like, I know, you know, nobody's gonna like say these lyrics are this poetic genius thing or whatever, and like Ringo's line's awesome, and the one that we are saying he wrote, or but like the chorus part, like what goes on in your heart, what goes on in your mind or whatever, like you're tearing me apart when you treat me so unkind, that cry, like in hearing John's voice in there and Paul's voice, like
yeah,
that sort of like that, there's a real emotion, I feel a real emotion there. And like, you know, I don't know, we've all been in certain spots in our lives where you're sort of like grasping at some difficulty in a relationship or whatever it is and trying to make sense of it. I think it's a pretty honest and cool chorus, honestly. You know what I mean? Like the verses are like whatever, but that simplicity,
I'm with you on that, man.
The simplicity of that, like what goes on, like what the fuck? Yeah, are you thinking? That's, like, that's why a, are you doing big, this? What, like,
WTF is like the theme of the chorus.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah. It also, like, there is a John Lennon demo of this, right? We don't have that Paul McCartney one that I do wish we had.
I wish we could hear it.
If there is a Rubber Soul Deluxe,
I hope it.
I hope that's what we get, right? Yeah. Like, that this is on there of Paul doing every single instrument and being like, no, guys, this is just how we do this one.
I wonder if he does that drum part the same, yeah.
I think there's something to be said for Paul coming up with that demo because I'm sure that's what Ringo practiced to. So that when they went in, they banged it out in one take.
Like, yeah.
They were well practiced to know how that went.
We talked about this already, right? This is a very early John Lennon composition.
Sure.
Yeah. Around the time of One After 909, to the point that they in 63 in one session to do the One After 909 and What Goes On, like as a not a double A side, but they were going to release those as a single, like put those two songs out, these early Beatles songs, right? And they just never got to do What Goes On, but there is like this outstanding Lennon demo of this thing. Scotty, I think I sent it to you, right?
Yeah, I got it right here, queued up. How can I conceal the thrill that I feel? Is our love still with no fear? This is all I want to know. What goes on? Do you guys not hear like the Dylan-y thing?
It's very Dylan-y.
Yeah.
That version's really great, actually. I didn't hear that. I didn't go out to hunt that one down.
Do your homework?
It feels very like that's the one I believe, you know, when I'm sort of playing like how they cosplay as country western, I'm like, oh, that one, I believe a feeling in that one. The group vocal on that one sounds really cool too. Now I'm a sucker for that.
Two guys
were aesthetic of this, of this recording. Like I'm a sucker. This is exactly what things I listen to sound like. But I like that.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of that was from what? 1962 or 1963 or something. That's like an early recording of that, and we get John's verse in there, the how can I conceal
yeah.
part, which doesn't make it into this song.
But not the, there at all. It's different.
But the yeah. chorus part is the part that they did keep, and we barely get any of that in that recording. But
and it changes too, right? Like the lilt changes, of the yeah. like their yeah, cadence. Yeah, yeah. That first what goes on is the exact same. The second what goes on is different they in the notes they stuff, hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different in the harmonies of the hit. I think the notes, the chordal structure is kind of the same, but like they do go to the four chord, but like the vocal harmonies are different because
stays up. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a Ringo part, and then there's two other parts. Like again, this is the support that the Beatles are providing to Ringo at this point. Is we've got this bed of vocal harmonies for you to sing on. Like you can't go wrong, right? Interesting though that this original verse part doesn't like there's a quote
what Paul took. Yeah, is this what Paul was, created?
So yeah, the chorus part that they had from this early version, what goes on, that part made it to this Rubber Soul version.
Final, yeah.
And then there's this Paul part which Ringo contributed to as well. Which is, I think John calls it a middle eight when they say like when he's talking about the contributions. There is no middle eight in this
song.
No,
I don't think John knows what that means. Yeah,
he's like other part that's not the chorus. Yeah. But it's a verse because it happens in the words change. That's what we call verse. Interestingly, like this would have made a great middle eight in this song. I think, like the how can I conceal the thrill that I feel, is our love still real? Tell me here, is it so? What goes on? Like, yeah. Why isn't that the middle eight?
Right?
Excellent.
Oh, man.
The B stands
let's put
for
this. Let's put that on our list of eight. Questions when we get Paul McCartney on the,
right.
on, the on the line.
Continue to
Paul,
pull
why did
line.
Why did you take why'd you take this demo and not throw this middle eight in there? Because right. RB knew to do it,
but so it's funny that like I think it's one of those probably Playboy interviews where John is shitting on everything and he's like Paul might have thrown a little tidbit in here, but it was my like I you know he's taking credit for writing the chorus, which is great. I mean that's definitely the chorus is it's recognizable, right? That pops out. Yeah.
That stays in my head.
That's
Hell
the
yeah.
song. That's what goes on. It has the title of the song in it. That's recognizable.
That's great, man.
I love this song.
You love this song? You've now turned on the song from like your intro of saying it's a song.
Or it's a song.
Now expressing your
opinion. I love it though. Like again, Beatles songs. The worst Beatles songs are great songs to me. When I hear this song, I'm not like skip. I would never skip this song. I'm going to sing along to it because I actually can sing along to it.
I think there's something to be said for that though. Like I think the Beatles, like the John and Paul are both want to be very supportive of Ringo to have a song on every record at least, right? And in doing so, they provide like a great foundation for him to shine. He's got a great drum track on it. He overdubbed his vocal track so he didn't have to sing and play it at the same time because that's impossible, honestly.
Yeah.
But also, like, the form of the song is a little bit weird. It sounds, at the surface, very straightforward. But the chorus is 10 bars long. So if you separate it into parts, it's like A, B, A, B, C. And the C is this, you know, you expect it to be A, B, A, B, B, A, or what, you know, I don't know what you expect it to be. But you don't expect it to be another one, like, I don't know.
Are you saying like the tell me why part is the C? Tell me why.
That's the verse. I'm talking about the chorus.
Oh, the chorus.
So the chorus here is a 10-bar phrase chorus. So it goes, What goes on? Whoop, I don't have my volume turned up. What goes on in your heart? What goes on in your mind? You are tearing me apart when you treat me so unkind. Right there, we've hit 8 bars. Yeah. And then the last bit is, what goes on? And there's a little thing with the vocals where they do a little suspension.
That's where the turn is, yeah.
In your mind, what goes on?
Where it resolves.
In your mind. Yeah. So there's like this, like, it's a 8-bar phrase, and then there's like a little tag on the end.
Yeah. It's clever.
And then on the verse, which is the part that was not written by John. So that whole chorus was definitely a John part. The Paul and Ringo part is, the other day I saw you as I walked along the road. When I saw him with you, I could feel my future fold. It's so easy for a girl like you to lie. And then there's an extra little bit. Tell me why.
Yeah.
So that's a seven bar verse. It's an A, B, and then this little snippet, a little tag. So it's all these little extra little bits that they add on that like adds a little interest to a song that would otherwise be like everything is 8 bars and whatever, 4 bar, 4 bar, 4 bar. But there's all these like, you know, 4-4-1 or 4-4, you know. There's these little, you know, 10-bar chorus, 7-bar verse. Or if you're thinking about it in cut time, it'd be like a 20-bar chorus and a 14-bar verse, whatever. But interestingly, the melodically, I guess, the what goes on in your heart, what goes on in your mind, it's all 1-4-5. That's like a, of course. That's what you build the blues on, right? Like. But the verse goes, the other day I saw you as I walked along the road. That's a four chord, but it's a minor chord.
Minor.
Yeah.
So he's going from, instead of going from an E to an A major, he's going from an E to an A minor. And on top of that, the vocal line sings a sixth chord over a sixth, so you end up with a minor sixth. The other day, I saw you as I walked. He's singing an F sharp over an A minor chord. The other day I saw you as I walked along the road. You get this like tension in there.
That's very Jonathan Richman right there. Yeah.
It's very McCartney too, because he does this on a couple things, where you, mama,
yeah,
you, like that sound becomes like Band on the Run,
yeah.
The other day I saw you as I walked along the road.
Yeah, oh my God, you, very similar.
Mama, right? Like that's a McCartneyism.
Damn.
What the fuck?
How'd that get in here? the unheard McCartney demo.
Yeah, we just gave it to you all.
Do you guys think like
Auto Beatles exclusive? Oh, RB does exclusive? The McCartney demo. Yeah.
I was hoping that RB,
you continue to blow my mind. Every week we hang out and you break this stuff down and
I try to
and
do
talk
my
about the future, like what it meant for the future of
you could talk about
Beatles
the future
or music. Otherwise, like you blow my mind, man.
That's what the B stands for.
Blows.
Careful. My mind. Careful.
I thought you were going to help explain why it sounds like John Lennon is milking bullfrogs during this song.
Oh, this guy hates bullfrogs. This song.
Yeah, he's got this little riff.
His, his little, the tone on that. Yeah. I was like, it took me a second or two to sort of nail down what I was hearing on that little.
Yeah, he's got this little, it's funny, the rhythm guitar part always, it always struck me as the Beatles trying to emulate, like, not that this is a, I mean, this is a country-ish song, but like the more of a, like a rockabilly kind of, almost like a Chet Atkins kind of like guitar riff where your thumb is always playing like the low strings and like it frees up your, you know, index and maybe middle finger to like play another like counter thing. It almost sounds like the Beatles are trying to emulate like a single rockabilly guitar player that can like has mastery of the fretboard, but they had to split it up so that like the yeah. low strings are only going to be played by John and the high E, like we're going to split the fretboard in half and John gets these low strings yeah. and George only gets these high strings. Cause yeah. that's exactly where, that's the lane that they stay in.
That's how it's played.
Completely.
Yeah.
And
I dig it. Yeah.
Yeah. So John is playing this part. John is playing this part that's like, it's all down there. It's maybe that's the bullfrog part you're talking about.
It is. That, yeah. That's exactly the part that I was talking about. Like it has, it's just very, the sound of it is very interesting too. Like your tone is way more pleasant at the moment. Like I just, it sounds weird to me. It really stuck out in the headphone listen a little bit and then I couldn't get over
it. It's sort sitting of like, in a weird place and it almost, it gets buried because I feel like the treble on George's guitar is turned as far up as it can go.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's loud. Like if you can feel like he's like gingerly playing and like exploring the.
Yeah. He's just, yeah.
Yeah. It does feel.
He's just kind of like, like his guitar is turned up too loud. Like I'm going to turn my volume up all the way and just try to be like gingerly. He's just kind of like.
One take. How much did he practice? Probably just
I don't know.
Enough,
like,
but
he's,
it sounds
he's
good,
exploring
yeah.
these, like, the high E and high B strings pretty much exclusively. But, like, I feel like there is an interlock that happens between the two guitar parts that, like, as yeah. I said, like, is it like, trying to emulate somebody that has, like, total control of their thumb that they can... while also doing...
Yeah.
Doing those other little flourishes on top.
Real Brian Setzer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Real Brian Setzer experience.
yeah, and to that effect, I think it's interesting too, you know, but it's the Beatles playing these songs the way that they can hear it and reinterpret yeah. it. It's the folks at the studio recording it the way that they know how to record
yeah,
things,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and that's where I feel like the country western stuff never feels
authentic
as authentic, yeah. you know, yeah. like they're just not nailing it as much. It's not in the wheelhouse. And there is, you're talking about the form of playing this music. It's folks that are recording this music all the time. It just sounds different to me. It doesn't play as well.
One of my favorite parts of my listen over the last couple of weeks was that like this little studio moment that comes out like Scotty, can you cue up around like a minute 25 on the song?
I had to read about it. I didn't hear it at first. Easy for a girl like you to lie.
Tell me why. So
I barely hear
what
it
I'm hearing
myself,
from you guys. There's research out here about this, but for me, like I didn't know that, and I heard this like John call out of like. I don't know if he says, tell me why, or I told you why, something along those lines. I think it's a callback to Hard Day's Night. To
yeah,
the tell me
saying,
why on
we,
Hard Day's
we
Night.
Told you why, I think is the full quote of it.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I don't think I'd ever heard it before. I read
no
it,
way.
And then I heard it this time around.
Barely.
You know what? I like those moments that are just, like fun studio moments where like clearly
well,
this was
yeah,
recorded
it
in
absolutely
the spirit
was,
of
right?
having a good time, you know?
That it what it sounds like to me is that's the live band playing. They're doing it in one take without a vocal. And John just knows the lyric and is like calling that out in the room. Like, I told you.
I took that as like, so they had a solid, first take that they're working off of. And then in the overdubs, it's Ringo singing lead vocal. And then Paul and John are playing, are doing their,
so that's
their backgrounds.
John's...
And I think that's like, he's not playing the guitar. So he's just like listening in the headphones
in the back there. Yeah.
And like,
trying to
rile up Ringo a little bit. Maybe.
It just sounded so, you know, it sounded so off mic. It sounded like it must be in the room while the band is playing, but you might.
Yeah,
be
right. But he's not saying it over here. He's saying it over here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, but it could be because, you know, I think Ringo did a scratch vocal.
Yeah.
I was curious about that. Cause the first take, it says it's John on rhythm guitar, that the bullfrog part,
yeah,
and then there's George exploring the top two strings of his guitar, and then Paul's playing bass and Ringo's on drums, and then it says there's an off microphone guide vocal.
Yeah,
so I don't know, is that because, like, if you want Ringo to sing his own guide vocal, that's a task, and also play the drums at the same time, that's asking an awful lot. I wonder if like.
Is it
Paul singing it and like he just doesn't have a microphone on him, you know, like he's playing bass and singing it for everybody else that's
far enough away from everything else,
maybe. It's also like this, it becomes a Beatlesy thing of the callback, right? Like you look at something like Glass Onion and that idea of like we're calling back to a song that we wrote less than a year ago. But like making that, like you end up building history and you end up building a narrative through that, that like becomes a cool thing.
I mean, there's probably a ton of these little through lines that we don't even pick up on where, you know, you're referencing. Maybe we do pick up on because we do talk about these songs in excess. So I'm going to give myself credit. There's probably a lot of these through lines that we end up picking up on as we're going through the lyrics, but I like it. You know, I like a self-referential writer, and they're writing all of this stuff, like you said, so quickly. So these songs are still like fresh on you. It's not like going back and referencing like old man to young man stuff. It's like, I wrote this like a week and a half ago. Like I still dig the ocean. Let's do another ocean metaphor, you know,
yeah.
Maybe we'll put this song under the ocean, you know,
what?
Beatles never play it live, I don't think.
No.
Nope.
I think
Ringo
they go
takes
back
forever
to
play it, yeah.
Yeah.
Ringo plays it still to this day.
Yeah. But it took him forever
part of his set list for sure, yeah. I have one other point to bring up, and it's very minor. So at this point in the recording process of Rubber Soul, they're really under the gun to like complete a record. And they record this thing. What Goes On is recorded November 4th of 1965, and Rubber Soul is released on December 3rd.
Like less than a fucking month.
So it's less than a month away from these records being pressed in on the shelves, and they are recording this song.
Yeah, that pace.
And it's not the last song they record.
And it's not the last recent song that they record. But like they're running out of.
What was that? Wait, what was after this?
After this was. Think for yourself, the word, You Won't See Me in Girl.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they're cramming and shit. And at this point in the Beatles, the kind of late night recording sessions become just a major plan of how they're going to make these records. So occasionally they had sessions that went late into the evening. But for this particular session, they booked the studio from 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. to record this recording. And from here on out, like it becomes like a regular thing that they're recording late into the night. But like it wasn't normally a thing where they would book the studio till 3 a.m. And they recorded this and they did one take and they did their overdubs and whatever. And they were done recording this at 2. And then from 2 to 3, they booked the studio till 3, but they went till, I guess, 3:30. But they went and recorded this 12-bar blues original, which ends up being on Anthology 2. And to me, it sounds like the Beatles are trying to like emulate Booker T and the MGs. Like they're trying to make their own Green Onions. Like yeah. they're it's like a slow blues groove thing. And I think they were very influenced by that kind of soulful blues thing that was I don't know what year Green Onions came out. What year did Green Onions come out? It was before this.
I would say 62 or 3, but I don't think it was way before this. Yeah.
It's still, I would say, somewhat relevant in 65, right? It's a hit
definitely.
Record.
Like yeah.
It's a vibe that they're trying to.
Chess Records, the whole thing, yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a, because there are other recordings where like, oh, this is the Beatles trying to be, you know, Smokey Robinson, or this is the Beatles trying to be another band. And like, I feel like this session was maybe the Beatles trying to be Booker T and the MGs.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
You gotta shift these times too, because then this is clearly the magic moment, the magic hour of making music, right? Like they're probably,
it's amazing
finding that too. I don't know. There's something that happens as after midnight. I think that that's
hard. And this was the song that story
get a little all hang out.
Yeah. I mean, I think I do want to get to ranking it. I thought you know, there's not a ton of covers on it, but there is a cover that I thought was pretty impactful that maybe I would play if you guys didn't listen to it all. But Sufjan Stevens did really like a reinterpretation of the song.
Totally.
Which I often think is the best cover song in some way. You know, like people do Beatles songs and very often think that they should do a pretty sincere covering of it. And you know, that's super hit or miss. But I think sort of like making it your own. So I was going to just play like the first little bit if you guys wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
What goes on in your heart? What goes on in your mind? You are tearing me apart when you treat.
So I think a fully alternate take. I don't think Scotty C's impressed with what Sophia wants to do with
that. I'm not that guy's big fan.
I really like it. It bears almost no resemblance to the original song.
I know. It's a very,
he changed
very
the chords, he changes the melody. I think he shares, you know, some of the lyrics. But this is the part, like this is like the band that played the Illinois record. Like, it's all of those, that instrumentation, and, like, that's my favorite part of Sufjan Stevens, is, like, that era, that mid-2000s, when we were hoping that we would get all 50 states, you know?
And we believed it. We really wanted to believe it.
Yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, the soaring, that sort of soaring part when he takes off in the verses.
So, just a couple years after Ringo's, though, like the Velvet Underground does come out with a song called What Goes On. Like,
Yeah.
Do you think there's any connection there? Like, do you think they're thinking of it at all? Do you think it's in Lou's head?
Lou doesn't give the Beatles much credit, and I would be surprised if he's pulling out a Rubber Soul Ringo tune to be his influence. So. Yeah. Or a nod to the Beatles. Like, that's, I want there to be. I don't think there is.
So everybody, I think we're just about there. I think it's about time to rank this song. We're going to put it on the big old list of Beatles songs. That list, we are assembling the songs as we talk about them from best to worst in the moment. You guys want to get after this?
Yeah, let's get after it. Please. Me.
Give me a quick rundown.
Yeah, so here we go on this very brief.
As quick as
that's great executive producing, Scotty. We're gonna make it very quick. Brief. So currently number one, we got I am the Walrus from the Magical Mystery Tour. Currently number 25 is where we're going. We got Hey Bulldog from the Yellow Submarine record. Currently at number 50, my friends, we have Free as a Bird. Yeah. Wow, from the Anthology record. Who knew that would be one we would want to talk about? We're going to stop before we get to 75, because that number 70 is A Taste of Honey. Tasting much sweeter than wine. That's currently sitting at number 70. Number 75, I'm talking about Boys. And we got Words of Love. Here is where I would like to start, friends, and that is...
It's so low, Tommy. There we go.
We're looking at Ringo's, right? Like, I need to look at Ringo's. Act Naturally. And Act Naturally is where I want to start. Where is Act Naturally right now?
That's at 66 right now.
Can someone help me out? Act Naturally is currently number 66. Thank you very much. I don't think this is as good as Act Naturally. What do you guys think?
I do not either, and I don't think it's as good as Boys, which makes it puts us in a tough position.
Oh man, really?
I'm not making decisions. I'm just throwing out my starters.
Yep, Scotty, where are you on this one? Like, because I could see above Boys. I could see it.
Oh, definitely.
Do you think it's better than Act Naturally?
No, I don't think it's better than Act Naturally. I will say it's better than Little Child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably like right around between Taste of Honey, There's a Place, Little Child, like that area. Do you want to know a secret? I don't know. Like,
that's interesting. Because that's
honestly a really good point. Because I do think
I would like to hear your all cases for
but
why
I
this
do think
is
it's better than Little Child. I think it's better than There's a Place.
Can somebody tell me why this is a better song than Act Naturally?
I felt, and maybe because I heard it first, or the way that we're running through these.
It's not a better song? Is that what you said?
I'm not sure that it is.
No, we're saying it's not a better song than Act Naturally.
Well, I'm saying that this song might be slightly better than Act Naturally. So I want to hear your case for saying why it should be below Act Naturally.
I'm all about this because I like this song way more than I'm letting on.
Don't play coy with us, Scott. That C doesn't stand for coy.
Musically, there's an more interesting form than Act Naturally. I think there's a throwback little piece that they're bringing.
All right, I like this. Let's keep going.
From an older Beatles that they're bringing into whatever present in the day of Rubber Soul. So they're drawing back from their roots a little bit, and I feel like Act Naturally is a little bit of throwaway to me.
All right. Someone's campaigning over here.
Here we go.
Is this song better than Babies in Black?
Hold on, I want to say about Act Naturally. We're talking about this. Act Naturally, I just something about that like, and Ringo singing it in particular.
Yeah,
this is a song about a man that's sad and lonely, and all I have to do is act naturally. Like he's playing this part, and he's in the movie, right? Like,
yeah.
There's something that like pulls it all together and like creates the complete circle.
There's a through line of it.
Yeah. So I really appreciate that about a song.
But there's also a through line in this
of the
opposite person who's just been like, why did this person just go and do this thing? Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
I'm a big What Goes On fan. I know it's not the best Beatles song. I know it's down in this section. I'm willing to
slap these two next to each other.
You guys are throwing it down the gutter. I want to maybe lift it out of the gutter a little bit.
Really nice.
I'm with you. Yeah.
I don't know that I would put it too much.
I would listen to this song. Like, I would listen to this song before I listen to Wild Honey Pie or All Together Now. Definitely. Yeah.
You're right. That's.
I would probably listen to it before Baby It's You. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Oh, no. We're just going to keep climbing.
All right. Here we go.
Before I Am the Walrus.
I listened to it before. Don't bother me. I listened to
it. It's more fun than Don't Bother Me.
It's more fun than Don't Bother Me.
Shit, it is climbing.
Stop.
All right, this right, Babies in Black.
There we go.
Is it better or worse?
I like this better than Babies.
Yes, I do too. Exactly. All right, Maggie May might be my ceiling.
Really?
Oh, Maggie May.
Yeah, but it's
that's a
long.
Throwback of a throwback. Like, right? But they're reaching way back.
Hold Me Tight is better than this song. Hold Me Tight is better than the song. Yeah. She's a Woman is better than the song.
I agree. She's a Woman is better than the song.
I would
go in between Babies in Black and Maggie May.
I second it.
All right.
I'm down.
I'm okay with that.
This is cool. This is a good agreement. All right. So this is our new number 61, everybody. What goes on?
It's weird that we didn't even talk about Marvin Gaye responding with sort of an answer to this song.
Of what's going on?
Yeah.
Is this really a response to this song?
He was deeply inspired to write What's Going On based on what goes on.
I see what you're doing.
Thanks again, everybody. That was another episode of Blotto Beatles. Did we hit that magical mystery word tonight? We didn't, Scotty. What was the magical mystery word?
I thought it was going to be rockabilly. And no. It wasn't.
My magical mystery word was question.
Question.
Ah.
It's a song that has a question mark. It's like, what goes on? Yeah. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, what is it with these songs that
end this way?
Mark. Like, how many songs are questions?
Sure.
I couldn't say the word, but I also think, like, in general, we might say, like, without question, this is this, or... without question, Tommy is the greatest AA side, or you know, like whatever it is.
True.
Once again, let you down on all fronts. When we don't hit the magic mystery word, it's no
we
fault.
We failed you,
but you might have because I missed it last week.
Hey, I'm Tommy. That we were your co-host this evening. This podcast is produced, edited, magically assembled by Scotty C. That's that executive producer on the ones and twos. We got additional musical supervision and assistance from our dear friend and yours. That's RB. You know that B always stands for Beatles. Hit us up on the socials. You can find us at Blotto Beatles. Don't forget, subscribe, rate us on your podcast app of choice, preferably those 5 stars, my friends. Remember, this show is performed by absolute professionals. We encourage you to enjoy Blotto Beatles responsibly. I'm going to bed.
Yeah,
everyone
you gotta sing first.
Oh God.
Oh God. I gotta sing. Then I'm going to bed. I'm not driving nowhere tonight. No one here is driving nowhere tonight.
It's gonna be a one take.
Yeah, one take.
It's gonna be perfect.
That's it. We're doing it in one take, right? RB. We want people to send us
pants
and
snacks
and
pockets. Pants with snacks in them.
That's it. Without further ado, my friends, I got 3 words for you. We all have 3 words for you. Those 3 words are peace and
love.
Pockets
love,
full of snacks. Love.
The other day I saw you as I walked along the road. When I saw him with you, I could feel my peace flow. It's so easy for a girl like you. Tell me why. What goes on?